Welcome to another episode of Tirapore, the show that's been proudly bringing you a fan's perspective of all things Sarze Sharks and Sarze Barracuda since 2018. As always, everything heard on this show is 100% my own personal opinion and is not affiliated with either club or the respective leagues. And now it's time for a brand new edition of Tirapore, the podcast made by a fan for the fans. Welcome to episode 2 of Tirapore season 6. And hockey is back. Yes, indeed.
Oh no, oh my god.
Oh my god.
I am just as in shock as you, my dear friends. I am just as in shock as you guys. Because obviously when we go to 2024, it's going to mark my 15th year as a Shark. And I'm trying to think, in all those years, have I ever witnessed a worse start to a Shark season? I'm not too sure. I really am not too sure. I have to think about that on that one. But winless in October. Wow. Winless in October. Let that sink in. Oh my God. Anyway, we're going to push through it, okay? We're going to push through it. We're going to try and raise your spirits. Might be hard right now, but we're going to try it. Of course, on this month's edition of Tour Report, we will look back on the first month of this dismal regular season. We're also going to take our first trip this year to Cuda Corner, where the Barracuda opened their season to some old friends in Rockford. Yeah, we've not seen the Ice Hogs in a while, so that was nice to get. And we've got another old friend we'll be seeing very soon as well, so that's exciting. So I'm going to take a lot of trouble with that. Of course, the West Watch is open for business. I'll give you a little tease of what we've got for that. We're going to be looking back at the Heritage Classic between the Oilers and the Flames. Yes, the Battle of Burwell Doors, yeah. We're going to try and not be too bitter about Beggs' banner ceremony, but wish me luck there. And a little bit of PWHL for you. A little bit of content there regarding Minnesota's PWHL team, who I will be backing once the inaugural season gets away in January. But I'm going to tease you what that is. But now I'm going to keep you in suspense for now. You're going to have to wait till Westwatch to find out how that gets involved. But yeah, so it's been a rough month. But before we get started, there's a couple of little things I just want to quickly talk about before we get going. So, back in a few. Okay, so before we get started, I just want to very quickly bring some breaking news that happened towards the end of the month. And that, of course, is Joe Thornton officially announcing his retirement. Officially, I should say, because obviously we've all been kind of thinking, has he hung up his skates? He's not on his face, because obviously he's not played since the end of the 2021-22 season when he was with the Florida Panthers, I believe it was. But then on October 29th, he has officially hung up his skates. And he's seen the video, the way he's done it, it's just like so laid back. Normally when you're leaving a job, you would probably want to go out with a big emotional fanfare. You probably would have the violins play. You wouldn't want to be sobbing and weeping. But no, it's like, nah, laid back, I'm on the beach, and guess what? I'm retiring. That just sets a precedent for all of us when we want to end our career, shouldn't it? Just do it Joe Thornton style. Yeah, so what? Okay. Bye. he has officially retired from the game after 24 seasons. and in the NHL. What a difference he has made over the years for Sarze. He does still hang around in Sarze, so would we might go in, before Patrick Marleau and be involved with the team in a job in some form, maybe. Maybe. Who knows? But what a career he has had and what a difference he has made to our Sharks. He's played with the Bruins, Sharks, then went to the Maple Leafs, and then finished off his career with the Florida Panthers. I mean, notched over 1,700 games. So it does make me wonder, is he the next to have his number at the rafters? Because I think we were all probably thinking, weren't we, when Patrick Moore had his done last season, we were thinking, is Joe Thornton next? And he was in attendance at the night, so maybe he's his next. Probably not this season, maybe that's something to think of for next season. Because he's only just announced it. Probably be a bit too much of Russ trying to organise him this season. But maybe he's always keeping an eye on next season when the schedule come out to see if the Sharks will pencil that in. Two iconic Sharks numbers go up to the rafters. Amazing. And of course, I had the honour and privilege to actually be there for Patrick Marleau's retirement night. So that was really special. We all kind of were thinking it. Right, now Marleau's number's up. Joe, anything you'd like to say? Is it going to be you next? Is it going to be maybe next year, year after, number 19 goes up? Maybe. We'll see. I've got loads of Sharks players I can think of that should go up the rafters. A lot of them are still active players, but yeah. But before I will quickly mention that any more quickly, because it broke literally towards the end of this past month, so I thought, okay. And squeeze it in like a quick little thing to talk about before the start of the year. So such an amazing player. Hopefully very soon we'll have his number up in the RAF SAP Centre, and all I can say, Joe, is enjoy your retirement. Okay, nowhere to hide now. Let's get on with it, shall we? Interesting way this first month's been split. Because in the first part of the lookbacks, we're going to cover the homestand. And then in the second part of the lookbacks, we're going to cover the road trip. Oh, it reminds me of the 2021 season when we're in blocks. Oh, okay. But, let's get to it. So you look at this homestand to start the season. You have the two most recent Stanley Cup champions. You had last year's conference finalist, and you had last year's big choke. Sorry, Boston, but you did blow it. You did blow it, I'm afraid. Now, you would think that would... For any team, that would easily be a good selling point to draw in crowds. Now, you're kicking off the season against some of the best, but in terms of the actual hockey, not so much. Anyway, we'll get to it. Right, so, October the 12th, home opener, yet again against the Golden Brats. I mean, come on. Nice the teams are able to start your season against. Anyway, now, it did take long though for this rivalry to ignite, as the gloves literally just got dropped 3 minutes into the contest. The Sharks actually did show promise here in a very tight first period, as new Shark Philip Zadina, who we acquired from Detroit over the summer, he scored his first ever goal as a Shark. But they still have yet to learn, from the mistakes that were made last year, particularly, the second period. That was when it kind of went to pieces last year. They still not learned from that. And, Baker's got two goals in that second period. It really did sort of dash their hopes in what actually did promise to be a very, very strong start. Because 4-1, you would have thought it should be a lot more a blowout when it comes to Vegas, but anyway. So we move on to October 14th. This one I'm really annoyed about, because this easily for me could have been my highlight of the month. Mackenzie Blackwood. If our defencemen and forwards can get their rhythm moving, then Mackenzie Blackwood would be a firepower. He would have no problem going in that net, because he could have teammates who he could rely on and would back him up. And how many saves did he make in this game? 51. A devastating 2-1 shutout loss. I normally don't like 1-0 hockey games. I think they're very dull, very boring, they are very, very rare. So I'm not normally a fan of 1-0 games. But do you know what? Actually, if it had just stayed 1-0, then I wouldn't have had a big of an issue. I would have took that. I'm like, okay, yeah, you still early days, still work at the Kings, but I would have took it. But the first goal, though, I think that was kind of a bit of a surprise. It was kind of one of those blink and you miss it. As Thomas Bordelot finally, officially gets his first NHL goal. So we get to do a whoop, whoop, whoop. Because you remember 2 seasons ago, it was towards the tail end of the 21-22 season, he did score a shootout goal in Vegas. And Vegas fans, you'll remember that, because that was the beginning of the end for your playoff hopes. happy days. Happy days. We all partied. And then 1 year later, that got thrown back in our faces. Anyway, it still happened. So apparently, that goal from 2 seasons ago didn't count as an official goal, because it was done in a shootout. It's still a goal. Should still count towards his tally. You'd like to go back and listen to that episode in season 4 to see if I did do the whoop boo boo, which we always like to do when Sharks players get their first ever goals. So you have to go and double check that. But anyway, just in case, it's done now. So Baldwin gets his first official in the league. So great. Although technically he's already had that happen in Vegas. Okay. I'm not a statistician, so take it up with people who do know their stats. But anyway, Mackenzie Blackwood, just stellar. I mean, he had to face 51 shots from Colorado there, just such a tough break, you know, to give up that goal very, very, very late in the contest. The fact that Mackenzie Blackwood was so stellar, it just makes that net result just so much, much worse, as the Sharks just threw a great game away. I mean, Colorado never went away. The Avalanche are a very good team. They're very good at putting the pressure on you, especially when you go on the penalty kill. The Sharks just could not at all get that insurance goal. And if they got that insurance goal, it would have put the pressure on the Avalanche, and you would have seen them maybe buckle, maybe bend, maybe break a bit. It's very interesting so far with Colorado how they're doing really, really well, despite the fact they have got their captain now. Remember, I did mention that when we discussed their season last year when we had Bernie come on that triple put bid. I did say how the Avalanche are a good team, but injuries played them in the end. So it's interesting. The Avalanche at the moment, they're doing really well, top of their division at the moment. So we'll see how that continues. But it was a really, really great game. I think a lot of people, you could say that's the highlight of the month so far. But it could have been so much more better if the Sharks just got that extra goal and maybe put it away. Tough break. rate, top rate. But Mackenzie Blackwood there showing off his strides, proving to be a well worthy asset, which is really amazing to see there. Yeah, because obviously we're expecting him and Kaapo Kakkonen to be this season's tandem. Mackenzie Blackwood, who probably knows he's probably going to have to fight to get those starts, already there first, showing that he can be the guy who can keep the Sharks in games. Okay, we'll move on now to October 17th. Is this the only game where the Sharks got more than one goal? I think it might be. 3 for the Sharks, but 6 for the Hurricanes. Now, it's a bit naive here for the guy who gets you on the score sheet first to then immediately take a penalty, which then costs you that precious lead. Because that's what we had here. We did have that. Sharks right first. The goal scorer immediately takes a penalty. And what does Carlisle do? Make us pay. Made us pay for it. But what I did like here though, was how fierce Nina, and he's proven to be a really great asset so far for the Sharks. I loved how he stood up for his team here after the officials completely missed that blatant penalty. And sadly, the mistakes of blowing leads it still has not been learned from the Sharks. They still can't seem not to grab hold of a lead. That was one of the goals we had on the pre-show. We said, protect your lead. That was one of our goals we made for the Sharks this season. Not living up to it so far. Yeah, but you can just see so far these few opening contests still not learning from the mistakes of last year. And it's going to be... It's a shame because you've been... With the Sharks going first pick, okay, maybe like the Colorado game, maybe they can try and shut down the opponent's offense here and really make them play defense. But sadly, no, last it would be. And the final game of the homestand, October 19th, still searching for that first win since 2015 over the Boston Bruins. Our next chance to do it will be at the end of November. So, anyway, but yeah. Loving the Bruins jerseys this year. I mean, we have done a teleport bid on it. Now I've seen them in action. I think they're really, really great. Boston, stick to those. It's about time you had a jersey change. But they really are really, really good. I think it's interesting how Boston went for a general, a general overhaul rather than just doing our birthday jersey. But again, no one was going to beat Wild Wing. No one was going to beat Wild. I'm so looking forward to our first game against the Ducks this season because we get to see them in them. I know. So on the next show, you hear me drooling. You know why. Anyway, back to this one, October 19th. So 3-1, so a lot closer than previous Boston games have been. But fairly even. It was actually a fairly even contest, despite that scoreline. Yeah, it wasn't your typical Sharks Bruins game where the Bruins would just dominate. Because at the start, it was a fairly even contest. And so about 2 minutes made in the first period, and then the floodgates opened. And you had 2 quick goals for the Bruins. Now the second goal, I think we could question that as being goal 23. But David Quinn was just like a... Meh. I was like, hello? There's a possibility to take that goal... It was the second goal. There's a possibility to take that second goal away. And it goes back to being a 1-0 lead, which you could manage. It's like, but David Quinn was like, oh, if this is a video, I could probably easily demonstrate what I mean. But he was like, kind of... Meh. We're probably going to lose anyway. It's the Boston, so... Meh. It's like, hello? You're supposed to be our bloody coach! You're supposed to be the one we're supposed to lean on. And you're just like, well... Meh. Okay, I know the drawback of failing a culture charge is a penalty. But hey, there's a case. There was actually a case. There was actually a case for that being goaltending appearance. But Dedeker was like, see, we're done. Let's see if we can all go home. No, that's not the mentality we should have. And also, how's he still got a job? How's he still got a job? If I was Mike Greer, I would have David Quinn shot. He'd be out. Not like that. Not like that. He would be out that door straight away. How is he still going into the second month of the season? How has he still got a job? How has he still got a job? I would have fired him straight away. I would have just thought, right, this is not working. David Quinn's a liability. He's useless. Get rid. Okay? Because even when we had Bob Boothler, the Sharks were still competitive. Okay, we ended up being about sixth in the division. But I would take that over a late duck in David Quinn. Sorry, Anaheim. That was a wrong choice and metaphor. I do apologise, Docs fans. If you're listening, I do apologise. But seriously, how David Quinn still has got a job, it baffles me. I mean, we kind of all knew that, didn't we? Because he was not very good as a coach for Team USA in Beijing last year. So we kind of knew what we were getting. But seriously, how much more are we going to humiliate ourselves with David Quinn before we realise... But then again, Anaheim last year didn't fire their coach until the end of the season, and they had a very, very bad season last year. They were dead last in the league last year, and yet still didn't get the overall draft pick. But I do wonder, oh please, don't let it be like a duck season, and we just embarrass ourselves for the whole year, and then after the season's over, then fire the gun. Shoot him now. Anyway, back to the, okay. Yeah, so that's two quick Bruins goals. It then just shut down Saturday's defense. So the thing I wanted to see the Sharks do against Carolina and against Colorado, Boston did it to us. Our offense got shut up for the rest of the game. And the only consolation, though, did come from another acquisition of the summer, Anthony Duclair, who we acquired from the Florida Panthers. He got the loan goal, so he's got his first goal now as a Shark. So there was some consolation prize, but really? Anyway. Right. So a dismal homestand. Oh, no. Another mistake we haven't learned from last year. Winnings, SAP. Bloody hell. Right. It kind of feels weird because it comes to the end of the first part of lookbacks, and yet when we come back, it'd be all road games. It's so weird. There again, I didn't make the schedule up. All right, we're going to take a break, and then when we do come back, it's our very first trip of the season to the West Watch. It's now time to pay our first trip of the year to the West Watch. This, of course, is the part of the show where we take a pause from all things Saturday and we have a look around the Western Conference to see what our conference foes have been getting up to. A very slow first month of news. Very odd. Very odd. It's been first month back. You think we'd have something to talk about. But there wasn't that much in terms of news. But we have got stuff for you. We have got stuff. I did thought at one point, oh my God, am I only going to talk about the Heritage Classic? Is that what we're going to talk about? But no, we've got something. In fact, we'll start with that Heritage Classic between Alberta. One of the greatest rivalries, I think, in the National Hockey League. And so it was only fitting that this goes outdoors. The Edmonton Oilers and the Calgary Flames facing off. The Oilers won that game. Let me find the summary. So we'll go on the Oilers website. We'll look that up. on the Oilers website. Or was it here? No, let's go on instead. Let's go news. Bear me 2 seconds. Ah, here it is. Oilers 5, Flames 2 was the final score in the Heritage Classic. Don't like those jerseys. I did not like the look of these Heritage Classic jerseys at all. I was like, when they released, I was like, really? 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 And then I was like, thank God for the Kraken. Because let's face it, Seattle's going to be the only one who's going to give us a really nice outdoor jersey this year, because apparently there are rumours they're going to base theirs on the Metropolitans, if leaked logos are to be believed. But I took one look at Calgary and Edmonton's jerseys and thought, they're not good. They're really not good at all. But the Stars were out. Including Connor McDavid, who did sustain an injury in the week. And we all thought, oh, no, is he not going to show up? But no, he was there. So Zach Hyman recorded 3 points. Vincent Deschenier scored his first career NHL goal. As he always ran out 5-2 at Commodore Stadium. Which, of course, 20 years ago... was, of course, the site where they lost to Montreal in that first ever outdoor game, that first ever Heritage Classic of 2003. You could argue, Montreal fans, why weren't we picked? You could have done an epic rematch. Come on. We've not had the Battle of Alberta outdoors, have we? So, it was about time. It was about time we had the Battle of Alberta outdoors. Yeah, so... So this was the first outdoor Battle of Alberta in NHL history. And it saw multiple point nights from Evander Kane, Leon Draisaitl, Zach Hyman, and as I mentioned, the first career NHL goal for Vincent Deschenier. Yeah. It was really controlled that game. But the fact Calgary did make it interesting to make it 4-2 at one point, but of course, then the Oilers sort of getting the win. And Connor McDavid, he did skate in the game. We did fear, was he going to be out with that injury? But no, he did skate. He did get one of those goals, but yeah. So, just great to see, an epic rivalry outdoors. It's amazing. And this is what we want to see from the outdoor games. We want the league to pick those epic rivalries like MLB has been doing with Who's Come to London. You don't want it to be some random matchups. You want to go for those epic rivalries. And the Battle of Alberta is a classic, iconic NHL rivalry. So the fact it's not been outdoors until now, it's just criminal. So we've had the Oilers host one. Let's see maybe in a few years' time if the Flames can host one. So dominant game of the Oilers. They have not got off to the best results, have they, Edmonton? They have not. So this probably will be a nice thing to look back on what so far been a very, very poor campaign. Right, then we'll move on to Vegas. I wasn't going to mention this, but there again, we've not much to talk about this month. So of course Vegas raises their Stanley Cup banner. I did for the purpose of this show. I did watch it. I did watch the intro. Did watch the bar raising. And I'm not surprised that Vegas were not classy at all. I mean, you had one opportunity here to show us that you can be civil, you can be humble. But no, Just carry on being the assholes you are, Bakers. Just carry on being the assholes you are. Yeah. And, yeah. They made it flashy. They had their Stanley Cup banner come out of a slot machine. Which, maybe poor taste, given how Ottawa Senators player has basically now just been banned for the rest of the season because he did gambling. So, maybe a bit of a poor taste there from Vegas. But then again, I'm not the one who put an NHL franchise in the gambling capital of the United States of America. So, no, that's a little bit poor taste. Look, kiddies, here's what you can win on the slot machines. Eh? Little bit poor taste there. Very poor taste. But, so it's Ben. It's Vegas. You know they're going to do it flashy. They're going to throw it in your face. I can't do cost swearing because I would get myself cancelled. But it does make me go and cough as well. You will cough. But yeah, oh god, it makes me sick. Really does. But no, anyway, but enjoy it while it lasts. Enjoy it while it lasts, because Operation Dethrone Vegas has begun. Okay, so enjoy that while it lasts. But no, but I was like, oh, for goodness sake. Next. We're not hanging about this month. There's not much to talk about, so we're gonna crack on. Lots to get through. Finally, we're gonna move away from the NHL and focus on the PWHL, which is the Professional Women's Hockey League, which of course we had its inaugural season in January. Minnesota is one of the six charter members, the only Western member of the league. The rest are all out in the east. I wanted to include this because I am actually going to be following the Minnesota team. So I'm wondering whether to include them on the show or maybe do a sister show. We'll see when we get to January. So keep an eye out on that. I'll try before we do any of it. Maybe before the season starts, I'll try and talk about the Lions and maybe like a bonus show. But we'll see. It's on the drawing board. So I thought I'd mention this now anyway. Because it involves Minnesota, who of course are a Western Conference team in the NHL. And of course, I'm going to be keeping a close eye on this in January. So Minnesota will be the PWHL team I'm going to be following. Back in their draft, back here, I believe it was in September, Minnesota had the first ever first overall pick. And so selected Taylor Heisey. And the news I got for you today is that she has now she has now signed a contract. So PWHL Minnesota have now signed her to a contract. Very good. So of course she now officially joins national teammates Kendall Coyne Schofield, who of course did spend the season on the Sharks broadcast. Kenny Panek and Lee Siskelin on the Minnesota roster. So Taylor Heisey was our first ever pick at the first ever PWHL draft. She's now signed a contract. Was the term mentioned? I think I did see someone maybe. Give me a second. So if I was a lot of you wondering, does that mean I've got to be now nice to Naughty? Yes, it probably does. It probably does. So Minnesota fans, I might have to now start being more nicer to the Wild, because I'm going to be joining the Minnesota team. Oh, God. I got term. So it's a 3-year term. It's a 3-year term she signed. So that doesn't mean the PWHL's got confidence it's going to be a long-term success, which we all hope it will. We all hope it will. Yeah, but there you go. So she signed a 3-year contract. But great to get our first draft pick under belt. So there you go. So yeah, so that's a nice little thing there to finish the West Watch. Like I say, hopefully going to do something regarding the PWHL, whether or not it's going to be like a new segment to talk about the Minnesota team, or it does a sister show. Don't know. Still working on it, because we are still in the early stages of the planning. The PWHL team still don't have names or brands. We don't have a schedule yet. All we know is it's going to start in January, and the 16s are Minnesota, Boston, New York, Montreal, Ottawa, and Toronto. So hopefully when we get near to the time, I'll do a bonus show and I'll explain to you how we're going to incorporate PWHL Minnesota to the bowl. Okay, I thought it was a nice way just to end up what has been pretty much a quiet first month for the West Watch. Alright, it's now time for Cuda Corner. Of course, the polisher, we get the Barracuda in bold. They've settled now. Second year in their new home. So exciting. Of course, it will of course be the home of the 2024 All-Star Classic. So that's going to be very exciting for the Barracuda there. It's going to be a very exciting season this year because we've got some old friends reunited. The first of those being Rockford. Yeah, so it's going to be very exciting this season. We've not just got the standard division rivals, we're going to have some old friends as well. Yeah. And this year was the first time the Barracuda opened the season on home soil. That's nice. So, should we get started? So, October the 13th, Friday the 13th. Ooh. Now, I'm not superstitious, okay? But to any of you who were, it must have been so hard for you to go to that game. So, we're going to be seeing Rockford first. So the last time we saw Rockford was back in the 17-18 season. So, it's been quite a while since we've last seen the Rockford IceHogs. Rockford, I'll just remind you, are the affiliates to the Chicago Blackhawks. They're the Blackhawks affiliates. Okay, so there you go. So, kicking off with two home games against Rockford. So the first on Friday the 13th, a 7-2 thrashing by Rockford. So the Barracuda opened the record season on Friday night with a 7-2 loss to the Rockford IceHogs at Texas Arena in Zaza. In the feat, Brandon Coe and Shakia Mokamalem managed to find the back of the net, but Parity Trouble played the Barracuda all night as the IceHogs notched 3 power play goals and empty netter. Shorty McMillan led all Barracuda skaters with 5 shots. In the first at the 15:58 mark, Coe received a pass from rookie forward Ethan Cardwell in his pro debut and second year forward pride in the lead to the feed to cut the IceHogs lead down to 1. Anders Vorak had scored on the man advantage, and then Mike Hardman stretched the team's lead to 2-0 before Kirk got the Barracuda on the board. The game got away for the Saturday in second period. Yeah, it always does. Whether it's Sharks or Cuda. Aussie Once Black was given a match penalty for a hit to the head of IceHogs forward Tail Howarth, who left the game and did not return. On the ensuing 5-minute power play, the Hogs notched a pair of goals in what would turn out to be the pivotal play of the night. Michael Tepley and David Goose scored 29 seconds apart to make it 4-1. Back there to put 36 shots on net in the game, but just 7 in the third, and would allow 3 more goals in the final 20 before finally stopping the bleeding on McLennan's power play tally. The IceHogs finished the night with 5 different players collecting multiple points, including Gust and Joey Anderson, who each recorded 3 points after Friday, Barracuda are now 3-6-1-0 in Opalus. 1-2 in Opalus at home. We haven't had many Opalus. And 1-4 against the Blackhawks affiliate Lifetime. But we would return the favour just 24 hours later. It was time for us to deliver our own 7-2 thrashing. As Barracuda avenged their 7-2 loss on Friday to the Rockford Ice Dogs by beating them, the exact same team, on Saturday noon, the exact same scoreline. Georgi Rodimov made 26 stops in his AHL debut, and Justin Bailey, Cole Cassius, and Ryan Carpenter all recorded multiple points in the win. Ethan Cardwell also scored his first AHL goal and now has got points in each of his first two pro games. In the first, with the game tied up 0-0, Cardwell managed to dribble a slow rolling shot through traffic and through Ice Hawks goaltender Jackson Stuber's 5-hole to open the scoring at 17:42. In the second, at 1:48, the Ice Hawks tied the game on Sitchin Anderson wrap around. Just a minute late and 12 seconds later, Brezny gave Rockford a 2-1 lead with a centre drive on the power play. The Barracuda would put the next 13 shots on net, reaching a franchise home record 24 total shots. In the period, just 1:14 after Rockford's go-ahead goal, Bailey would score in a breakaway, as he worked from left to right on the Ice Hawks net and ripped a shot upstairs for his first of the season. 8:20, the Barracuda's fourth line of Tanner Kapik, Adam Ruska and Anthony Vinson relentlessly worked and awarded when Kasvik tucked in a shot under the bar from just outside the crease. With just 2 seconds remaining in the frame, Carpenter would join the party for the first of the year after Bailey intercepted an Ice Hawks pass in his own end. In the third, the Barracuda wouldn't quit, and rightly so. And Castles, while short-handed, would add another goal when he got around Storbner and a loose puck that the Rockford goaltender had come out beyond the hash marks to get to. Oscar Lindblad would score at 10:03 on a breakaway, and Carpenter would pot his second of the game on a tip at 18:12 to make it 7-2. Impressive work. Right, the next three were all against the Horses, and all very, very crushing heartbreakers. All three one-goal results, only two of them resulted in points. So while the Barracuda haven't had a great first start either, they managed to get points in their games. In fact, the first loss is the only one that was a blowout. The rest were all quite close. So Barracuda showed promise this first month. Okay, the next three were all against the Horses. The first was a back-to-back in Henderson. So October the 20th, 5-4 regulation loss. And the Barracuda managed to erase a 3-goal deficit on Friday night at the Dollar Loan Centre. I don't like that name, it just implies gambling. Are you sure there's not any gambling addictions in Vegas? I don't like that name. Anywho, in Henderson, but a late Horses power play tally proved to be the difference as the Barracuda fell 5-4 to the Horses. You can say it's civilized all you like, but I'm sorry, if it looks like a horse, it's the horse. So I'm carrying on. In their first road game of the season, in the loss, Ryan Carpenter, Leon Gwagny, Braden Cole, Daniel Gulshin, and Shaquille McNally all managed to record multiple points. In the first, the Barracuda cashed in on their opening power play of the game as Gulshin centred a pass to Justin Bailey, who directed it into the open goal from a top crease at 11:44. Horses would find a way to tie it at 16:47 with former first rounder Brandon Brisson buried. After a late first period penalty against Thursday, Henderson's Mason Maroney would fire in a shot just 16 seconds into that second frame, and then Jacob Brodnik would go between his legs at the 48-second mark to make it 3-1. Horses. 4:13, Henderson would go up by 3, as we mentioned, on a Dyson Mayo shorthanded blast after head coach John McCarthy used his timeout. The Barracuda would rediscover its game off a 1 face-off. Gorkany would beat Jiri Paslak through the 5-hole. Then 13.8, Carpenter would shovel in a loose puck to cut the lead back to down to just 1. In the third, Coro would complete the comeback with a power play goal at 13.40, but unfortunately Coro would later be called for his second my other game. While on the power play, Sheldon Rampout would snipe in what actually would be the game winner at 16.16. In this first regular season outing since February for Etienne McNamee, he suffered the loss, allowing 5 goals on 23 shots, while Patina picked up his third consecutive win. Right, 24 hours later, it was an overtime loss, so, but at least a point this time, 4-3. So in less than 5 minutes remaining in regulation, the Barracuda held a 3-1 lead on Saturday afternoon. Oh, no, no, the Sharks, demons affecting the Cuda. No, I'm not doing the song. I'm actually whining. I'm not doing the song. No. At the Dollar Centre, Hennepin would give up 2 goals in 11 second span before falling 4-3 in overtime to the Horsies. In the loss, Brandon Coe potted his 3rd goal of the season, which is tied for the team lead, and Ethan Cardwell and Daniel Gushnin finished with multiple points. There's a lot more points for a lot of players, which is good, which is really, really good. Really good. It shows the effort, despite the scorelines. In the first, following a Horsey's power play, Ryan Carpenter would thread a rink-wide pass to Gushnin, and the puck would bounce off the back of the forward to the trailing Coe, who fired it in at 3:25. After a neutral zone giveaway, Mason Morelli would tie the score at 8:42. In the second, the Barracuda would take its lead back when Nathan Todd ripped in his first of the year on the team's first shot of the period. And then after a Henderson giveaway, Hartwell would snap in a breakaway at 11:20 on the Barracuda's second shot of the frame. In the third, defensive lapse would lead to Lucas Cormier ripping a pass to Gage Quinney, who would one-time the puck in at 16:05. And 11 seconds later, on offensive draw, wing Dyson Mayo went top shelf from the point to tie the score at 3-3. On their heels, the Barracuda were called for hooking at 19:31. And despite multiple looks within the 5 seconds, the Horsies could not win in regulation. But in overtime, after the Barracuda's penalty had expired, the Horsies finished the comeback when Grigory Denskino would wide in the game winner. But unfortunately, we're not done with the Horsies. 2 trips to them, it was time for the Horsies to come to us. October 25th at Texas Arena again. Same scoreline, same result. Overtime loss by 3-4 against the Horsies. But at this stage, it's at least they're gaining points. Okay, I know one's not good. I know we were like, oh no, 2 is better than 1. But at least they are getting points here, okay? It's a long season. Baby steps. The Barracuda are showing growth. They are showing promise, unlike their parents. The Barracuda are leading by example this year, okay? But it's baby steps. Long way to go. Alright, so the Barracuda squandered a 2-goal third period lead for the second consecutive game, falling 4-3 in overtime to the Horsies on Wednesday night, this time at Texas Arena. In the loss, Justin Bailey, Daniel Gushin and Leon Gorky all recorded multiple points, and Jordy Romanov made a career high 37 saves. In the first, just 3:23 into the contest, and the Barracuda opened the scoring when Bailey got to a loose puck down the right wing and centred a pass to uncovered Gushner, who ripped in his first of the year, extending his point streak to 3 games. Horsies would find a way to tie the score off a face-off by Brendan Risnan at 12:07, but at 15:45, Radim Shimek his second debut. Sorry, his season debut, sorry. Oh, got another. This season debut, wide a pass into the far right post from the left wing, and Ozzy Wumblatt drove it home for the first of the season to give Saturday back its lead. In the second, the Horsies put 19 shots on net, but Romanov was perfect, turning them all offside. With 23 seconds left in the period, Bailey ripped a shot from the slot as he pulled up a dime and was able to shed Horsey's defender Leighton Ark. In the third though, the Horsies would cut the lead down to one, just 32 seconds into the frame. Jacob Demnick notched his first of his AHL career. Leonardo the Barracuda took its fourth consecutive minor penalty. Brian Barossi would tip in the equaliser despite the Barracuda going on the power play at 10:26. The game would go to overtime, and for the second game in a row, the Horsies would win it in the extra frame as Frost would score again his 15th career goal against the Barracuda. Okay, so not great there for that. Three heartbreaking losses against the Horsies, all by one goal, and at various points, Barracuda could have put a strong hold on that game. Right, we then finished the month with a back-to-back, October 20, 29, against... Now, I don't want to be rude to Hershey, no disrespect to Hershey, but for me, Coachella should have won the Collar Cup. I'm going to say that. No disrespect to Hershey, okay? You enjoy your win. But for me, the Firebirds were the talk of the town last year. They came to the AHL and just set it on fire. And of course, the Firebirds were the two teams I did see on my trip in LA. And they were smoking. That was a really, really tough game. Yeah, so the Firebirds, they should have won the Collar Cup last year. But yeah. So, and as always, as we saw last season, it's going to be tough against the Firebirds. Still yet to get our first win over the newbies, the Firebirds and the Wranglers. Could we do it this month? No. Okay, both of these games were in San Jose. First spot, October 28th, an 8-2 mulling from the Firebirds. We got scorched. We got Fuego'd. I mean, the mascot, not the song. I love the fact the Barracuda wore special jerseys. Hats off to the AHL. You get a round of applause. Hats off. Glad to see somebody wants to honour communities. Well done. Right. The Barracuda allowed a season-high 8 goals. I mean, I know it's still early days, but allowed 8 goals on Saturday night against the Firebirds at Texas Arena. In the loss, Daniel Gushnin, he scored twice to send his point streak to 4 games, which matches a career long. He has now picked up multiple points in each of his last 4 outings and leads the team with 9 points on the year so far through 6 games. In the first, the Firebirds opened the scoring at 5:18 when Luke Hemmen ripped in a loose puck from between the circles of a failed Cuda clearing attempt. After that, the Cuda were called on for their second mile of the opening 20 minutes. Cole Lynn slid a pass to Max McCormick, who rifled in a one-timer to give the Firebirds a 2-0 lead at 13:05. With 2:07 left in the frame, Firebirds on their 17th shot of the frame would take a 3-0 lead when Ryker Evans took the puck straight to the net from the left wing, went around Magnus Schroner and shoveled in a backhander. In the second, Kshirbali tacked another goal when Ryan Winterson forced an ozone turnover. That's a new term. And found Shane Wright uncovered in from at 9:10 after an offensive blue line giveaway by Cuda that led to a Firebirds odd man rush. Jacob Melanson was able to sneak a shot through for his first in the AHL. The Firebirds would make it 6-0 when Marian Stojanic tipped in a Connor Carrick point shot at 11.9. In the back, Coachella continues to pour it on, when McCormick cashed in again at 12.8, and Winston netted his first career goal while short-handed. Lacuna will then dash Driga's shutout bid, getting the last two goals, when Gushin scored at 60.1 and at 17.34. So, Georgi Romanov allowed two goals in relief, working the final 26.3 of that contest. Not a great one. And then the next day, we nearly had it. We nearly got our first win over the Firebirds. But alas, another heartbreaking overtime. Led by a pair of goals on Sunday afternoon, but couldn't get close. Couldn't close out the game and would eventually fall 5-4 to the Turbine Firebirds in overtime. For SJ, it was the team's third OT loss of the year in 7 outings and the 5th consecutive defeat. We will have an opportunity next month though to get our first win of the Firebirds, so. Daniel Gustin extended his point streak to career best 5 games, notching 3 assists in the loss. Gustin now ranks 2nd in the AHL in points and 1st in points per game for players who have played 7 or more. He's joint 3rd in the league in assists. It's still very early days. After not playing on Saturday, Brandon Cole opened the scoring on Sunday afternoon as he guided in a loose puck from just above the crease at 1:32 while on the power play. The power play goal was the Barracuda's first in their last 12 attempts and the first to given up by the Firebirds this season. So the Firebirds have been very good in their penalty kill so far. 2 minutes later, Justin Bailey would guide in a loose puck from almost the identical spot to give Sarze a 2-0 lead after Colin cut the lead in half at 3:25. Gushnin whipped a pass to Leon Gorky, who one-timed a shot in from the left wing to make it 3-1. Cooled out at 8:19. In the second, the Firebirds would outshot Sarze 15-7 and score the only goal in that frame at 10:56 on a Connor Carrick point shot. Firebirds managed to tie it in the third at 5:30 on a net front scramble, but Radim Shimek in his second outing would find a way to give the Cuda back its lead at 8:54. Unfortunately, the Rattler would be called for a delayed game penalty at 2:18, and whilst on that power play, Andrew Portorosi went upstairs to tie it at 4-4. Score tie at 4, game goes to overtime, and in the extra session, Shane Wright notches the overtime winner whilst the Firebirds were back on the Maya Bands at 2:18. And now you guys are so close. We will eventually one day get a win of the Firebirds. Just not today. Actually, first tough month, actually. You start with a team you haven't seen in a while. You have 3 in a row against the Horses, who are a tough team. And then you have the final 2 against a team that should have and could have won the Collar Cup last year. But, unlike the Sharks, the Barracuda showed promise. They showed effort. And they did manage to get some points. So, baby steps. Like I say, a long way to go. And remember, we only need to finish the top 7 in our division and playoffs will be ours. But yeah, so some promise there for the Barracuda in what was a very tough first start to their second year in Texas U. All right, folks, ready for round 2? Okay, now the first part of lookbacks covered the whole homestand. This second part of lookbacks will of course cover on the road trip. Now, is it a balmy road trip? Is it a classic Sharks Barmy road trip? Because it starts in Nashville, and the rest of it is all out Eastern Conference. So is it a Barmy road trip? I don't know. Maybe if Nashville's in the middle portion, it would be. But anyway. Okay. Prez, of course, celebrating their 25th anniversary season. So, although like Florida, it seems to be a quiet one. Only Anaheim seems to be wanting to, you know, float the boat of, look at us! Happy birthday to us! Happy birthday to us! Look at my shiny jersey! Happy birthday to us! Yeah? Come on! The last decade, it was pretty much a mush you had to show up it's your birthday. We've got quite, it's been quiet this season. Boston, their 100th. Okay, yes, they've got nice new jerseys. We've not got a standard one. Florida, their 30th. Gorgeous patch, by the way, Panthers. Bring that logo back. And then the Preds. Oh, I had no clue it's their birthday this year. I had no clue. Until our game on October 23rd. I was like, oh, this is an interesting patch on the Preds. Oh, it's their birthday. Oh, they're 25. Oh, happy belated birthday, Nash. You know? Come on. Bloody hell. Where's our 35th in 25-26? We need to do a full-blown shebang. Alright? I'm not having a quiet one. Not like a lot of these teams. Oh, anyway. Can we talk about hockey? Yeah, that's why we're here. Right. October 21st. Sorry, did I say 23rd then? Sorry, I meant 21st. October 21st. 5-1 loss to the Predators. Why, it's a standard blowout against the Preds, let's face it. As I can tell you from last season. Oh, and this year, of course, we have got two home games in Nashville, I believe, this year. Yes, two games in Nashville. In fact, this was our first trip to Nashville since the 21-22 season. Because, of course, last year, the Preds and Sharks opened up the season in Prague, in Czechia. So obviously both teams had one of their home games used there. And of course the third game of that regular season series was of course my first game of my trip from last season in San Jose. So we haven't been to Nashville since the 21-22 season. But nothing's changed. Still a blowout loss. Now if you look at the other factors that make up the game, the Sharks were actually either sort of on par with the Preds, or outright bested them. But when it comes to the actual, you know, where it counts and where people will keep banging on about, there was just no energy. Nashville just walked all over them, literally. As someone needed to provide the backbone to stand up Mackenzie Blackwood after what Roman Josi did. I'm like, come on! It's like, come on! Where are the Sharks of the olden days who would not allow that to happen, who would start a brawl if that happened? It's like, come on! It's like, and I did hear some of our players speak out about this afterwards, so some of them would not have thought this. But come on! You've got to protect your netminder at all costs. How many times have I said it in past seasons on this show? You've got to stand up for your netminder. Okay, because so far Mackenzie Blackwood has been the backbone of this team. Okay, and yet everyone else is just not really supporting him. But that was a devastating thing to happen in the game, and I just can't believe the Sharks just let the Predators get away with it. If that was me, God forbid, you'd never catch me on the ice. But let's just say, God forbid, if that was me, right? Josi, come here, gloves off now. You're getting a backhander. So it's like, come on, don't be pussies, don't be pushovers, okay? Stand up for your teammates. It's getting aggro today, isn't it? It's getting really aggro. I can feel the tone of my voice rising. It's because I'm just damn excited. Okay, come on, stand up. If something do what Fitzgerald did a couple of games ago against Carolina. He stood up for his teammate when he did like what he thought. That's what I want to see more of. If you get a struggle in the game, then call out the bad calls when they happen. Okay?
Right.
Speaking of pussies, we then move from one pussycat to another pussycat. The Florida Panthers. They've got a new goal song. Although it's not as controversial as Toronto's. That'd be very interesting when we go to Toronto. What goal song we're going to hear when the Maple Leafs score? You should have just kept the old one, Toronto. I know it was a bit like, really? When they first brought that one out. You know what I mean? But actually, it kind of worked well. Why did you change it? So God knows what goal song Toronto will play when we go to Toronto. But anyway, Pampers got a new one. Don't like it. And of course, the Pampers have also raised a banner in the rafters. So that's nice. But what I did notice very interestingly, because we've talked about, it's been a running joke for some years now how attendance in Florida at Pampers game have never really been quite good. Whenever you watch Pampers games where it's in four highlights, you always lose a lot of empty seats. Now you would have thought a trip to the Stanley Cup final last year should easily boost your attendance up for this season. Well, no is the net result. I watched that game. I could still see a lot of empty seats. And yet, this is the first, and yet it's an anniversary season. You've been to the Stanley Cup the previous year. You just have loads of reasons about to market your games to, you know, to the locals in Orlando. What is going on with the Pampers marketing team? Bloody hell. Honestly, right. What I thought was really great about this. What are the pieces of the Timo Meier trade? Fabian Zetterlund pounced on the Panthers' penalty kill. That has so far been Florida's biggest weakness. So here's the credit, and then we'll go to, and then it's, right. This one's gonna be a gift. And take. I'm going to give credit and then I'm going to take it away. Here's the give. So the giving is I loved how, you know, one of the pieces of that TMR trade, which did take place while I was in Thursday, you know, capitalise on his opponent's weaknesses. You've got to look at all the teams in the league and work out what the weaknesses are and how can you pounce on those during the game. Even if you come away with a loss, work out how can you pounce on your team's weaknesses. And he did that. So brilliantly, we got a power play goal. But a quick response and a very costly penalty by Tomas Hertl, the delayed game pocket of the glass penalty, it gave the Cats momentum. They got what their own on the power play, and then they just never looked back. However, so that's the takeaway. However, this is back to a gift now. What I did like was there was actually some effort here. You did actually see effort from the Sharks in this game. Particularly in that final frame when they were really pushing for it, really pushed for it. You could really see they were trying to get that equaliser to just at least get it overtime, then we could go overtime and worry about it afterwards. You really saw them trying there. But they just still need to work on protecting their netminder from onslaught traffic. Because, oh my God, how much traffic the Panthers gave Mackenzie Blackwood. Too much. And didn't we also have a collision at one point? I think we did. But no. So there was effort here. But sadly, just not quite enough to at least get a point out of it. But you could have argued that could have been one. Right. So, October 26th. So not the usual back-to-back weekend in Florida. This is the third season of the Rona that's back-to-back has been split up. Because normally, when you go to Florida, but you go to the Pampers one day, and you go to the Lightning the next day, or you go to the Lightning first, and you go to the Pampers the next day. The last few Sharks seasons, that back-to-back has been split up. Either with a game in either Washington or Carolina, or an off day. And this year was an off day. But doing this one against the Lightning felt like a really, really long night. And given the time differences between Manchester and Tampa, it was even longer. Oh, I honestly don't even know what to say about this final loss. I honestly don't know what to say. The sharks just basically didn't turn up in what felt like a long, long, long night. The lightning pretty much just jumped over them and controlled that plot from the very beginning. In fact, at one point in the game, our wonderful sharks commentator, Randy Harm, summed this up brilliantly. I put it in my notes. He, at one point, when the game was on 5-on-5, he said this, which summed it up perfectly. He said that the even strength play looked like a Tampa Bay power play. Yeah. That summed it up brilliantly. So, well done, Ronnie Harm. You summed that up perfectly. It's like, yeah. Yeah. This is why Tampa has had 3 consecutive trips to the Stanley Cup final. This is why they are one of the favourites in the East, year in, year out. But there was also no discipline on the Sharks. I mean, how many times, I think I lost cap, how many times did we go to that penalty box? Not good. What was interesting, comparison between the game in Florida and the game in Tampa. In Florida, the Sharks were really, really good. I didn't mention this, I should have done. In Florida, the Sharks are really, really good at dumping the puck with Arizona and icing. 4 hours later in Tampa, it's a complete mess, their puck management. They just kept icing it again and again and again and again, and you can't afford that. Because eventually, one icing will bite you in the arse. So, yeah. So, that was an interesting comparison between two different games in different sides of the same state. So then we go to October 27th, so the second half of back-to-back, 3-0 loss to the Hurricanes. Now, you know, given how both teams played the previous night before, so we were in Tampa, the Hurricanes were hosting the Kraken, and the Kraken really pushed the Hurricanes. The Carolina did win that game, but it was in overtime, but the Kraken, they really pushed them there, and they've not been having a good time so far, the Kraken. Yeah, and how, you know, as I mentioned, how Kyle had a tougher against Seattle. I'm a little bit surprised that the Sharks weren't able to register a single goal here. Kyle had doubled the amount of shots that they tallied. They played a much stealthier game and they even struck on the power play. So our once glorious penalty kill is basically now a shadow of its former self. Add that to the list of things that David Quinn has done. Run. Let me make it like that. Destroyed our penalty kill. Put that in massive shade of red. It was so lovely how you would come. We used to always the show boast the penalty kill. Say how we were always considered as one of the great penalty killing teams. That's gone now. It's been blown up. David Quinn's put a rock of dynamite on it and just pulled the trigger really, really hard. It's like, oh God. Get rid of him. No coach is better than a bad coach. Get rid of him, please. Fire his ass. But there was a positive here. There was a positive. The positive from this game, though, was how the Sharks were much better at the face-offs than Kyler was. So, little things. That's the proverbial thing is you've got to look for little things you can celebrate. Not much, but yeah. I've just had this with the Oakland A's this season in baseball, so I'm used to this. I'm used to trying to find tiny positives. I'm used to it. Anyway, right. And then finally, October 29th, we go to the nation's capital. 3-1 loss. What is going on with the Washington Capitals? They are very, very uncharacteristically at the bottom of that pile right now. I mean, talk about shadow your former self. Washington was normally a contender to be President's Trophy, most years. They won a couple of those, and you know, it's like, wow, what has happened to the Capitals? I mean, yeesh. But then again, Washington can argue at least we've had a Stanley Cup to our name. Yeah, fair play, touche, but anyway. Interestingly, the last few years, this has been a very interesting match for the last few years. The last few years, it's been basically the road team gets the victory. Well, the table's turning this one, but again, the Sharks had a lead, and you threw it away! Luke Cunning got the Sharks on the board first, but their failure to take advantage of the Capitals, as I just mentioned, uncharacteristically bad start to the season. They suffered a massive collapse in that third period and failed to draw a single penalty in that game. But did manage to concede a power play goal of their own, something that has not been going well so far in the last few games. But oh my god. So you can see so far this first month, so the demons from last season still have been exorcised. They're still haunting the Sharks. And there's a few new ones as well, like not being able to get many shots on goal, giving up power play goals. There are a lot of things here that need to be turned around, but I'm afraid it's only going to get worse, my friends, before it can get better. I'd love to leave you with the classic, still as the old song goes, things could get better. But I've got a feeling I will then have to go, or not. So I'll hold that for now, for another time. Right. Okay. Record for the month. I really don't want to say this out loud. It looks horrible on my screen. 0-8-1. As I mentioned at the start of the show, I can't remember in almost 15 years a time when the Sharks have failed to get a single win in a month. If anybody can find that out, because I'm not gonna do this. No way. I'm a busy man. I've got other shows to do. So, dear listeners, if any of you can think of between 2009, when I became a Shark, and to 2023, if you can think of any time between that time period where the Sharks have failed to get a win a single month before this year, email it. Let me know. I can maybe read it on the next show. TeamReportPodcast@gmail.com. That is the email. Let me know. Because I'm not going to do this. I've not got the time to do this. I've got other shows to do, okay? But if you guys want to have a go at doing this in your free time, let me know. And, yeah. Because I can't think of it. But it's now time to do the high put and low put of the month. Oh, no. It's going to be tricky. Right, I think for me the low point is going to be the Tampa game, because I mean, for me that was the one where I just thought, well, they're hardly showing at all. It's like there's no effort here. I mean, it's like, and oh my god, it feel like a very, very long night. It just felt like a long night. Maybe that's going to be the first message. So I mean, the Tampa game, that's going to be the low point. Now the high point of the month. Now it's hard to try and pick a high point where you failed to get a single win in the month. But I could make a case for either the Colorado game or the Florida game. And actually, I'm going to choose one of them. I'm going to pick a high point. And I'm going to pick a high point. I'm going to choose between one of those two. I'm going to... Do I want to go Colorado or do I want to go Florida? I think I will say... Actually, I'm going to go... Hard to think. It's obviously one also was a shootout. You gotta take that into account as well. Yeah, do you know what? Just for Mackenzie Blackwood's stellar debut, I will go with Colorado. That will be the high point of the month. Just he was stellar to make in that first outing, and he showed promise of what he can be if he has a good team around him. You've been listening to Cheer Report, the podcast made by a fan for the fans, brought to you by Spotify for Podcasters. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. For all the latest Cheer Report bits, subscribe to my official George Hand YouTube channel. Don't forget, we always would love to hear from our fans. You can email us at teoreportpodcast@teore.com. We'd love to hear you, and we could read out your messages on the show. And while you're at it, why don't you give us a 5-star rating and leave a review? Not only does it help boost our self-esteem, but it also helps new fans find our amazing and wonderful show. Well, until next time, all that's left for me to say is, and so I'll leave you now.